From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people of the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the blood-soaked life of Belle Starr, the queen of the Western Outlaws.
This area where Belle Starr was prevalent and where all of her outlaw friends were prevalent, it was enormously violent.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Belle Starr, born Myra Mabel Shirley, was a notorious figure of the American Old West known as the Bandit Queen. Living in the late 1800s, she was a famous outlaw in the ranks of Jesse James and the Younger Brothers. She was a horse thief, a bootlegger, and a symbol of rebellion. Starr challenged the traditional gender roles and inspired countless legends. Dane Hucklebridge has written a new biography of Starr. Using public records and contemporary newspaper accounts, he separates myth from fact. His book is Queen of All Mayhem, The Blood-Soaked Life and Mysterious Death of Belle Starr, the Most Dangerous Woman in the West.
There was a period starting shortly after her death when she, you know, when she, her obituary first appeared in the New York Times, and then there was a short book written about her life that was sort of a, you know, a salacious account that blew up and gained popularity across the country. There was this long stretch where she was something of a household name beginning in the late 1800s. I'd say the first half of the 1900s as well, first half of the 20th century. And then in the post-war years, you know, the Cold War period, I think you start to see that she fell out of the public consciousness a little bit. She was forgotten, and you saw other, you know, female Western characters like Calamity Jane or Annie Oakley rise center stage, and she was forgotten a bit. And I think that's what I mean when I say, you know, when I say that she's been lost, she's been forgotten to a certain extent, is that she doesn't have quite the same, you know, name recognition that she did once upon a time. Although certainly, you know, she's not completely unknown either. Particularly among people who grew up with, you know, Westerns or are just Wild West enthusiasts. There's people who come from that area, you know, kind of Texas, Oklahoma. You hear some awareness of Belle Starr, but she's definitely not the same kind of household name, I think, that she once was.
It's interesting how she was portrayed in those Westerns, kind of a femme fatale sex pot of some sort, Jean Tierney movie. Belle Starr, the Bandit Queen. Very much fictionalized telling of her story. Elizabeth Montgomery took a stab at it in 1968. Some other B Westerns, spaghetti Western. The look that they took at her was very much informed by the times that these films were created, not really looking at her as a feminist icon.
I think that's exactly, you know, what you're saying, exactly correct. These depictions, when she was depicted in Westerns, it wasn't accurate because the real Belle Starr at that time, there really wasn't a place for her in the sort of the, at least in the American, you know, the American creation myth that the sort of that Westerns became. When you think about the role of women in Westerns at that time, it was very much, you know, often like the school teacher for back east, or the kind of quote civilizing influences coming to tame the West and, you know, keep men in line and whatever. And, you know, and Belle Starr wasn't like that. I mean, she was truly a representative of the Wild West. She was truly an outlaw. She was fiercely independent. You know, she was sexually independent, financially independent. She lived her own life without apologies in a way that many people found offensive and, you know, would not have sat well with censors to a certain extent, you know. And I think that's why her depictions aren't entirely accurate, and also why she eventually just kind of fell out of favor, why you stopped hearing that much about her, because she didn't fit into the rubric, the sort of paradigm of how women were traditionally depicted in American Western.
When she was killed and she was murdered, shot in the back, shotgun blast, and then in the face, that's where her story basically begins.
Well, yeah, that was when she went from being just sort of a colorful local character around Oklahoma, it was then Indian Territory, and, you know, kind of northern Texas, this sort of outlaw corridor at the time, Fort Smith, you know, that area. And she went from just being this local, colorful character to her story effectively, as I mentioned, blew up. I mean, it was at a time when particularly Easterners were really hungry for these stories of the vanishing West, and particularly outlaws, desperados, things of that nature. And I think just kind of on a whim, a dispatch went out after she was killed from one of the local editors, and the New York Times found out, and they ended up running it, it's sort of obituary just because there was so much novelty, this bandit queen, this outlaw
This
queen who'd
desperate
just been
woman.
murdered. Yeah, exactly. And from there, her story kind of blew up. It caught the eye of some salacious tabloid publishers, Fox among them, and he commissioned this, he had this, police gazette, this sort of true crime gazette, already doing some publishing, and he commissioned this book to be written about her life, much of which was fabricated, some of which was true. And from there, her story took off. And that's really, the idea of Bell Starr as this, I guess, as this, as a public figure, as sort of a Western icon, that's when she garnered national attention. Before, prior to that, she was really just sort of this very colored, character with a very checkered past who is known, just locally in these places where she was constantly getting in trouble with the local authorities, both tribal police and the U.S. Marshals, the federal police. So up until that point, she'd just been the sort of local pariah who was always causing trouble in that, this very localized area in Texas and Oklahoma. And then she, or it was after her death that her story went national.
She was basically branded as a female Jesse James.
Essentially, yeah. And it's not, that part really wasn't an exaggeration because she was friends with Jesse James. She actually hosted him briefly when he was hiding out at her outlaw ranch, Youngers Bend, in the Cherokee Nation. And she led a gang of criminals. She rose in the ranks of frontier organized crime, I guess you could say, to the point where she was the leader of a band of outlaws who engaged in horse theft. That was a big racket. Almost certainly smuggling, also almost certainly armed robbery. I mean, it's because this is, we're really talking about organized crime, a lot of it did happen in the shadows. So you have to, some of it you can take guesses at because of what she was arrested and charged with. And she was arrested and charged twice with horse theft and once essentially with armed robbery. And also just how she was depicted at the time and who she was associating with. And how she appeared in, newspaper articles, court records, things like that of the day. And she was, it was acknowledged. It wasn't an exaggeration that she was the leader of this band of desperados that operated out of the Cherokee Nation at that time.
There is this argument that the Wild West wasn't that wild, that's just an exaggeration, that's just the American myth. But when you look at the life of Bell Starr, it seems like it was pretty uncivilized, untamed.
Yeah, it was interesting going into this because I remember years ago I'd taken at Princeton taken this history class on history of the West, and I remember initially I was all excited because I'd grown up with Westerns to a certain extent and things like that, and essentially the class was its whole point seemed to me to be kind of to stress this fact that, oh, forget about the Hollywood depictions or what you've seen in Westerns. That's not what the West was. It was, spent a lot of time talking about water rights and, land rights and emphasizing how many settlers didn't even own guns or this and that. And so I had this idea in my head that, going into this, that, oh, maybe there was quite a bit of an exaggeration. Maybe it wasn't quite as wild as I thought.
Because how
But
could you even have a country? Stagecoats were being held up all the time. These that doesn't
yeah.
It's
And
like, oh,
but
that's pish posh. How could that actually be
yeah,
true?
it's and but looking into it though, particularly, and maybe, perhaps there are big stretches of the West where things were tamer, but this area where Bell Starr was prevalent and where all of her outlaw friends were prevalent, it was enormously violent and there was lots of crime and banditry. And the proof is kind of in the pudding. When you look at her life, how many people in her life, including herself, died from gun violence?
Her
And she
husband's.
had, yeah, I mean, her husband, she had two brothers who were both killed in gun violence. One serving as a guerrilla, at the time of the Civil War in Missouri, another shot off the horse for, during a, he stole a horse and was effectively tracked down and shot off his horse. In terms of her husbands, her first husband, Jim Reed, he was killed by a bounty hunter, gun violence. Her second husband, well, I guess technically third husband, Sam Starr, he was killed in a duel. You could argue potentially defending her honor. That's some debate, but he was killed in a gun duel. And then she was gunned down, you know, sort of gangland style, and it's still up in the air. I talk about this in the book. And then the husband at that time, Jim July, shortly after her death, he was also killed, you know, fleeing from the law. And then her own son, not that long after that, was also killed. And there's some dispute whether he was killed in sort of a drunken bar brawl or whether he was trying to apprehend criminals himself. I think it was the latter. I think it was just a drunken bar brawl. And when you look at this, just the amount of violence and the amount of bloodshed, it becomes clear this was, at least in her milieu, this was a way of life. And it was enormously violent. I don't think there's looking at her life and the people around her, it's hard not to reach that conclusion.
So when you said one of her husbands was killed in a duel, what does that mean?
It was something pretty close to what you would think of, maybe not quite as theatrical as the classic, you know,
It's a high
quick
noon.
duel. Yeah, but essentially he had a lot of trouble with the tribal authorities because her husband was Cherokee and they were living in the Cherokee Nation. And he'd had a lot of entanglements, his family for a long time, the Stars, a lot of entanglements with authorities. And not that long before that, this Cherokee lawman named Frank West had gone a little bit renegade and shot him off his horse and actually killed the horse in the process, which was the horse was named Venus. It was Belle Starr's favorite, you know, prized horse. And later on, it was actually a Christmas party, ironically. They, you know, it was just these bad, sticky situations where Belle and her husband Sam showed up at the Christmas party, and Frank West, this Cherokee lawman, also happened to come by. And there was a bonfire, and he was down the hill a little ways, kind of warming himself by the bonfire. And according to legend, anyway, in some accounts, Belle Starr, who was a big enthusiast of the piano, was playing at the piano. Some accounts have it as like a pedal organ, but some kind of keyed instrument. And there's this party going on, and then, you know, it was just like what you think of a Western, but it wasn't the record skipping off, but something like that, where the music stopped, and they noticed Frank West, their mortal enemy, this Cherokee lawman, down at the warming himself by the bonfire. Some accounts have Belle Starr saying to her husband, "Go get that SOB." Some just have Sam deciding to do it on his own, but he, you know, called him out. He left the cabin where the ranch house where this party was going on, went down with his guns, kind of challenging the Cherokee lawman Frank West to a duel. And they both drew their guns. They both fired, and they both ended up dying. It was very, very cinematic. They both hit each other with bullets, and they both died. So he did. Sam, you know, Sam Starr did get his revenge. He did kill the lawman Frank West, but they both he died in the process as well. So they both fell to the ground with bullets in them.
Belle Starr liked to play the role of the outlaw queen, didn't she?
I think she relished in it and she embraced it. And you can see in the way she dressed, how she carried herself. You know, she wore this long black velvet riding habit. She liked to wear side saddle with two big revolvers at her gun belt. And she wore these, you know, elaborate Stetsons pinned up with big plumed with big feathers. And it was a get up, you know. She saw herself as a sort of lavish gangster, you know, dressing in fine clothes to be feared and respected, and she embraced that role. And she was very open about it. Even in interviews with, you know, Dallas newspapers, she would say, you know, I'm a friend to any gallant outlaw. I mean, I don't think she ever called herself an outlaw queen. Other people did, but she embraced that role and was very upfront about it. Yeah, and to her own detriment, in a way, though. It's a bit like, you know, when mobsters get a little too comfortable in the limelight and attract, you know, too much attention or something like that, get from the feds. She sort of had a similar problem, and she got to this point where she was openly challenging, you know, U.S. marshals in the street, sheriffs in the street, and posturing as a sort of cock of the walk, whatever. And it caught up with her, and it got her a lot of unwanted attention from the authorities, and they started raiding her ranch, Youngers Bend, and going after her, and then tribal authorities started going after her husband, and eventually it caught up to her, and she did get in a lot of trouble and get arrested multiple times and charged once for horse theft, and that's when she spent a year in prison in Detroit.
She had her ivory-handled six shooters.
Yes, her prized possessions were her six shooters, and according to legend anyway, she had a prized silver-plated revolver that Cole Younger, the great outlaw and partner of Jesse James, gave to her. And there's this whole other story I explore in the book too about this potential love affair between her and Cole Younger while she was married to a different outlaw, Jim Reed. And there's been a lot of conjecture and, debate about that over the years, whether or not that love affair actually happened, and even whether or not her daughter Pearl was actually the daughter of Cole Younger. And there's no definitive answers, but I talk about that in the book
We
too.
have
It's a
the
great.
two pictures side by side, saying looking at the facial comparisons, and it does seem, like there's something going on there.
Yeah, there are pictures, a picture that's believed to be of her daughter, and there is a picture of an older Cole Younger after he gets out of prison. He was one of the few who actually didn't get, one of these outlaws who didn't get killed. He just ended up getting arrested and spending a long, doing a long prison stint. But when you look at her daughter and Cole Younger, it's hard to deny that there isn't a resemblance. But he steadfastly denied that there was ever anything untoward between them. And he did admit that she kind of had a crush on him, but she denied that anything ever happened between them. But then, if something had happened, he was former comrades with her husband Jim Reed. They fought together with Quantrill's raiders during the Civil War. So it would have looked very badly if he'd had an affair with Belle Starr while she was married to his sort of friend and former war buddy Jim Reed. So that, I mean, that could explain why he may have denied it. And I think, and Belle Starr, she never discussed it openly that much, but there was times later where friends would say that she sometimes referred to her daughter Pearl as Pearl Younger and kind of took up the name. So, there's no definitive proof either way that I'm aware of, but they say where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's certainly at least a lot of smoke around them potentially of having some kind of love affair, but it could also just be rumor and legend. It's hard to say.
Wow, who knew that the Wild West was Peyton Place,
Yeah, no, with Belle Starr particularly, I mean, her love life was very colorful, and she had lots of lovers. She was very independent. She at one point, one of her lovers, who she later married, Jim July, she actually forced him to change his name to match hers upon marriage, and he was 15 years younger than her. So that's what I was going back to, how there was, there wasn't really a place for her in these sort of, puritanical, like morally pure, lily white westerns of the post-war era, to have this woman who married a Cherokee, married her Cherokee lover who was 15 years or younger, and forced him to change his last name to match hers. It was very, she was fiercely independent and lived life on her terms. And I think that's part of the reason she was written out of the script to a certain extent in westerns of that era, because a real authentic Belle Starr, there really wasn't a place for her alongside, John Wayne and one of those classic western movies.
So she grew up from not wealthy family, maybe middle class family, established family of the South, a genteel Southern belle. She rejected that role. She decided she wanted to have freedom and independence. If that meant to, she was also going to have to be an outlaw rather than being someone else's property, a person who had no voting rights, no rights, then that's what she chose. Is that the story?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And yeah, her family, she grew up in southwestern Missouri, in Carthage, Missouri, kind of on the very outer edge of the Ozarks. And her family was kind of Appalachian stock. They'd done the whole Western thing from Pennsylvania to, through to Kentucky, then to southern Indiana, then to the outer edge of the Ozarks in southwestern Missouri. And but her father did fairly well. He was ambitious, and he started out as breeding horses and became successful as a horse breeder, stock farmer, and then ended up moving into town, into Carthage, and going into business, opening this tavern hotel, which became quite successful. And he did manage to become something of a town father, something of a community leader, this prosperous businessman in town. And so that's how Belle Starr grew up. And her mother was something of a Southern belle too, from Kentucky.
Well, she was
And
a
you know,
Hatfield,
it's
wasn't she?
Well, there's long been these stories that she had Hatfield blood. I'm not sure how firm that connection is, but that was the story, that she was connected through the Hatfields. But I think she came from relatively was fairly educated. I don't know if she was wealthy per se, but was had some social graces, as was quoted at the time, and was educated and was something of a Southern belle. And I think that's the milieu that Belle Starr grew up in, was this in town, surrounded by fairly sophisticated, educated people. And she herself was was sent to the local girls' school to kind of, learn Latin and Greek and how to play the piano and French and art and these types of things. But her role, I think, in this society is kind of a Southern belle, was just to be ornamental, was just to be married off to a local businessman or, someone prosperous in the community and, entertain friends and keep house, so to speak. And she just never wanted that. She was fiercely independent. I think you probably say something of a tomboy growing up, but she loved riding horses, she loved shooting guns, she loved going off with her brother into the woods to hunt or fish or explore. And during the Civil War, when her brother became a bushwhacker, joined the Confederate insurgency in Missouri, she helped him out. She was essentially was a teenage spy doing reconnaissance missions, feeding him information because she had more freedom of movement as a young woman. And that was her first taste of action and adventure. And I think she realized quite quickly that the sort of independence and freedom and self-determination that she wanted, that if she followed the law-abiding route, it just wasn't possible. And being an outlaw, she had the freedom to kind of do whatever she wanted. She could love whoever she wanted. She could take whatever she wanted. She could live wherever she wanted. And that's the path she chose. But the irony in that, I think, is when you look at what she actually did as an outlaw, her two main money-making schemes, her two main rackets, one was stealing horses, and she loved horses, was passionate about them. She stole horses, traded them, fenced them for outlaws to get back on the market. So she was in the horse business, just like her father. And she also, her ranch, Younger's Bend, she had something of a protection and sheltering racket where she would offer And the outlaws, including outlaws like Jesse James, the chance to come and hide out on her ranch and escape from federal authorities, and in exchange for tribute. So she made money from that. And so essentially she was in the hospitality industry. So when you look at her two main rackets, how she was raising, dealing in horse flesh and in the hospitality industry, just like her
Weren't there
father.
reports that she disguised herself as a man to do robberies?
There's long been rumors about that, and I don't think it's been proven, but I'm convinced she did. There's one famous armed robbery that she was charged with. She ended up beating the rap and getting off. But there was a witness, a girl who testified against her and said, pointed to Belle Starr and essentially said, "This woman robbed us dressed as a man, wearing a white hat." And she did have a white hat she was famous for. And it seemed too specific to have been made up. It wasn't women dressing up like men in the Cherokee Nation to rob people at gunpoint was not common at that time. And it just seems it fits with her character, and it seems I think it was probably true. You can't prove it, but I think she was involved in this holdup, and I think she did do it disguised as a man,
So
and may have done
was she a
multiple arrests.
rarity? Was she an outlier? Or was this not that big of a deal? I mean, there are a lot of women that were married to outlaws. They may have gotten sucked into the world of crime as well.
I think there were a few, but I think women who did it to the extent that Belle Starr did, I think that was quite rare. I'm not aware of that many who did start out being kind of sidekicks, tag along, like she was with her first husband, Jim Reed, but then eventually went on not just to being sort of gang lords, crime lords, leaders of a gang, but actually leading a gang of men who are more or less subservient to her. And she certainly was a leader of a gang and ran. I mean, maybe it's an exaggeration to say she was a mafia don of sorts, but I guess you could make that case. She was the leader of this organized crime racket. And I think that was quite rare. I'm not aware of that many
And
instances of
you
that. So I
write
think
that her
that.
power came from her Rolodex, that she knew so many outlaws.
Well, I think that definitely contributed to her rise in this world. And at this time, she didn't start out in the Cherokee Nation. She started out in kind of, white Anglo frontier society back when she was married to Jim Reed. But not long after his death, she made her way to the Cherokee Nation, where they'd long a lot many of these outlaws had long had dealings, smuggling whiskey and fencing horses with outlaws in the Cherokee Nation. And she ended up marrying into this family, the Stars, who were a very well-known family. And they'd had a long history of being, political rebels during the Cherokee Civil War, then also getting into legal entanglements, crime problems after that. And Tom Starr was sort of the patriarch of this family. And she married Sam Starr, his son. And that was her entree, I think, into this world of Cherokee organized crime. And I think her Rolodex is, as I said in the book, the fact that she was close friends with many of these outlaws, including men like Jesse James and Jack Spaniard, whoever. Some of them were Cherokee, but many who came from the Anglo side of frontier crime, I think that was a boon to a certain extent and made her more appealing. Because, she could help them get business when it came to whiskey smuggling, fencing horses, things like that. She had these great contacts, on the outside in the Anglo world. And I also say in the book too, she was an expert in horses. She'd grown up on on her father's stock farm breeding, while he was breeding horses. She was really like anything equestrian, kind of an expert in that regard. And I think, given the fact that stealing and fencing horses was a major source of income in for these sort of crime families in the Cherokee Nation in Indian Territory, I think that very likely made her appealing as well. Someone who was an expert at judging horse flesh and who had all these contacts in the frontier criminal world.
When she died, shot in the back while she was riding down the trail, shotgun blast, and then she was shot in the face. The being shot in the face tells you that this was personal.
You could argue that it was definitely an execution. I think the way she was killed, she was riding her horse alone. She just helped escort her husband at the time, Jim July, into Fort Smith to face theft charges, and she escorted him halfway and then was riding back. She stopped briefly at a little social gathering, kind of post church or whatever Sunday gathering, and just to say hello to chat. And then she was going home from there on her horse. And somebody shot her in the back from about 20 feet away, I believe, with a barrel of buckshot, knocked her off her horse, shot her off her horse. And then, as she was lying face down in the mud, walked up to her and, essentially executed her gangland style with a second barrel of buckshot at point blank range. And there's long been debate about who that was. And there's a number of characters who are pretty promising suspects. But yeah, it's never been solved who that was. I think it's a great, a great crime mystery from the Wild West and from American history in general. And yeah, I talk about that quite a bit in the book. I put forth the different suspects and their motives and explain how realistic or how likely it is that they were the killer.
Where is she buried?
She's buried still right in the Cherokee Nation, right outside where her cabin used to stand at Younger's Bend. And you can still go visit her grave. It's not very well marked. There's not big signs or anything like that per se, but if you know where to look, it's just right off the road. You have to walk maybe 40 yards, something like that, and her grave and tombstone are still there where they've always been. But unfortunately, her cabin is no longer there. And I think for a long time it did stand and people could visit it, but I don't remember the exact year it was torn down. But her cabin isn't there, but you can walk over and visit her grave. And people still do. You can see little offerings and candles and notes and things like that that people have left.
Dane Hucklebridge is the author of Queen of All Mayhem, The Blood-Soaked Life and Mysterious Death of Belle Starr, the Most Dangerous Woman in the West. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters at tpr.org, and you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.